All right, so, continue our study. So we're on this last section, as we said, chapter 4, just dealing with the lack of knowledge. And so because of that, we see two or three things here. The sin of the land is what this chapter is all about. And then he breaks that down into the sin of the people. We looked at that. They constantly broke the law. They were living without restraint and were rampant in their violence. Bloodshed was a normal thing for them. And so that's why God is condemning them. And that's why the harsh judgment is coming. Then we started looking at the sins of the priests. And that's where we have the most popular passage in Hosea, probably. And that's Hosea 4:6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And we need to understand that that is continual. It has a universal application of it. His people back then were about to be destroyed. But even today, local churches can and sometimes are destroyed. Local churches have divided and have died off. And so a lot of it, not always, but a lot of it is caused by a lack of knowledge. And then we have individual Christians who, that's always a threat for all of us. We need to make sure that we know God's word, that we study regularly, that you don't take the word for granted and you don't just accept what the preacher is preaching or what the teacher is teaching, but you do your own study. And do it regularly, because individuals have, and many more in the future will, lose their souls because of a lack of knowledge. And there's other reasons why Christians leave the faith. Of course, moral issues, the flesh gets in the way, but probably the primary cause of Christians becoming unfaithful in one way or another tracks back to their lack of knowledge. And so God's people are destroyed for that. He's zeroing in on the priests. They rejected knowledge, he says. And you notice those things, again, go together. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because you have rejected knowledge. So God ties the destruction of the people directly to the fact that their leaders rejected knowledge. If the leaders are rejecting knowledge, if God put them in place so that they could be the guides and lead the people spiritually, religiously, and with regard to God's law, and they reject the knowledge, then what's going to become of the people? Now, remember, we looked last week at what Jesus said in Matthew, the blind lead the blind, what? They both fall into the ditch. So this is not to excuse the people. And don't want you to take that away from some of the things that Hosea says, even going forward, because he does lay blame at the feet of the priest. But he understood, and we understand, that the people are accountable. In fact, we'll see in just a minute that he makes sure, God makes sure that they understand that everyone is accountable. And so we'll take a look at that in a minute. But he says, and since you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. That's not blaming the children for their father's sins. This has to do with the priesthood itself. With the Jews, the priesthood continued down through the family. And so it was supposed to be. Now, they violated some of this as well, particularly the northern kingdom. But they all were supposed to be Levites, of course. But it was a succession. And this is basically saying they're going to lose the privilege of priesthood. And so that is going to come to an end. All right. Well, I think we left off on this slide. And the more they increased, the more they sinned against me. And I think I was close to making the point here that, I mean, that's serious. We can make application of that as well. That God was blessing them, and that has to do with, we remember, wealth and power. Probably more so. I don't know that we can exclude the number of priests. Perhaps the number of priests were increasing. But this has more to do with their power and the wealth that the priests were gaining. And we'll see in just a minute how, at least in part, how they were doing that. But the more they received power and strength, then the more they prospered, the more they sinned. And that we have to take that seriously, even with us. Sometimes that continues to happen with the people of God. I don't know that it is a common occurrence, but it is not unheard of that those in the body of Christ, as they climb the corporate ladder or whatever, as they gain influence in this world and power and prestige, they, instead of that drawing them closer to God, realizing that God blesses them, it pushes them away. And they start putting those things, material things, before God. And so they increase in sin. And that's a very real danger. And so we can learn from their mistake. But that was the pitiful path that they were taking. God, they were just continuing to sin. And so he says, I'll change their glory into shame. And then he says, they feed on my sin, or they feed on the sin of my people. They are greedy for their iniquity. And what that is dealing with is, the word sin there, the ESV in the footnote, has sin offering. And this is pointing to the practice that God put in place for the priest. The priest lived by the people and from their sacrifices. And they would, their food and everything that came from the sacrifices that were offered. They would have the edible parts of the sacrifices. Whatever wasn't consumed in the sacrifice, that would go to the priest. And you remember, originally, the Levites, that's what they received instead of land. All the other tribes got a portion of the land. That was the priest's inheritance. And so, now, the priesthood is completely corrupt. And so they're taking advantage of that and actually encouraging sin. Because the more the people sinned, what would they do? They would offer up more sacrifices. And that would go to the priest. And that was a source of some of their wealth. And so they had gotten so corrupt to where that's where they were. They were literally encouraging sin. They wanted more and more sacrifices. And so he's condemning them for that. You remember in Exodus, with regard to the priest, he says, this shall be their inheritance. I am their inheritance. And you shall give them no possession in Israel. I am their possession. They shall eat the grain offering, the sin offering, and the guilt offering, and every devoted thing in Israel shall be theirs. Now, nobody would ever think, oh, this is, we can gain some wealth with this. I mean, only the real corrupt mind that has slipped so far into sin that spiritual things are no longer spiritual. They became just so vain and corrupt that they viewed that as something that could gain them wealth, and that's how they were getting some of their wealth. W.R. Harper said in his commentary, the priest encouraged the people to sin in order that they, the priest, might have larger numbers of sin offerings. I mean, can you just imagine that? Of all the things that we've talked about so far, and it's really, I don't know about you, but it's just amazing to me how far the Israelites drifted away from God. And it's even more amazing that they did continue to do some things, worship God in some ways, even though they were involved in all of this corruption. So you add this to all the other immoral things that they were doing. And you know why God is about to punish them. And it's a real reason why, you know, I've said a few times already in this class, they're basically beyond hope at this time. Like, God knows he's going to punish them. Judgment is coming. And it's because, and we understand, like today, you know, we'd be very slow at saying that. I don't know that we would ever say that about anyone today who is still alive. Like I always say, as long as a person has breath, that person can either obey the gospel or repent. But that's not, that is literally true, but there are some people whose mind and just their lifestyle is so deep and engulfed in sin, they're never getting out of it. I don't know that. I don't know who that is. Do you think God does? Yeah, God does. And he knew that about his people. And it was just their total mindset and how deep they were into the sins that they were participating in. God knew judgment is going to come. It is now inevitable. And the more we study some of this, we can kind of see, yeah, I mean, you wouldn't ever see that back then, and we can't read hearts or anything like that, but as we read this now, we can see, yeah, they were so involved in sin that if they're not going to repent, they're just not going to do it. And God knew that. And so this is, you know, it's a, probably what I'd have to calculate it, I guess, they're like 100 years away from being carried off into captivity. So there's several, I mean, you know, this continues on for a while. But God already knows where they are and where their hearts are. And they're not recovering. They're going to be destroyed. And so we can see with some of this why that is. And it says, and it shall be like people, like priests. And now he's just emphasizing no escape for anybody. They're all going to be held accountable. The people can't, you say, well, you know, it's the priest. It's their fault. That's why we've gone down this path. They need to be punished. They've led us down this path of idolatry, immorality, and all that. No. As we said, the blind lead the blind, we both fall into the ditch. And the priest might say, yeah, no, it's the people. We're the ones that were called by God and separated, and we have a special relationship, and they have to be punished. No, the priests are going to be punished too. Everyone is going to be punished. The entire nation is going to be obliterated. And you're not saying, now in reality, we know that there were probably some here and there that escaped, and that we already know that some of them ended up going into captivity with the southern kingdom. We know that because we know some of them returned. So, you know, we just know that. But just as a whole, generally speaking, the entire nation is going to be destroyed. People and priests alike. And it's a lesson on accountability. I will punish them for their ways and repay them for their deeds. And it's not the first time this kind of language. In Isaiah 24, verse 1 through 3, it says, behold, the Lord will empty the earth and make it desolate. And he will twist its surfaces and scatter its inhabitants. And it shall be as with the people, so with the priest. And then he really elaborates on this thought, just to show this idea of no one escaping. He says, and so it will be with the slave and with the master, as with the maid, so with her mistress, and as with the buyer, and with the sailor, and with the lender, with the borrower, and it just goes on, the creditor, with the debtor, and the earth shall be utterly empty and utterly plundered, for the Lord has spoken the word. What's the point? No escape. For those who are in sin and just are determined to live in sin, it doesn't matter what your station in life is or what you have accomplished, who you are, what your background is, it doesn't matter. There is no escape. And do you think there's a lesson in there somewhere for us? Of course. Don't think, well, it's going to be different with me. I have a special relationship with God. He knows my heart. No, if you're in sin, there is no escape. If you're in sin when Jesus comes back, you're in trouble. You're going to have to, you're going to meet the consequences of that, and there's not going to be any way out of it. And that's the point that God, through Hosea, is making. Again, it's not the first time he made it, but that's the point. The people and the priest, everyone, is going to be held accountable. And we need to take a lesson from that. And he says, they shall eat, but not be satisfied. And the message here is, and again, another practical point for us to understand, sin just doesn't pay. Like, it's not worth it. And you might think, well, yeah, there might be some gratification with sin in the immediate. And that's true. I mean, there's no doubt. Sin is pleasurable, some sin. And there might be some earthly rewards in the beginning. But at some point in time, that's going to cease. And even from a physical point, sin, it doesn't deliver on its promises. Most people who live in sin, and are particularly those who are involved in overt immoral living, that catches up with them sooner than later. It may be fun at first, but it just doesn't pay. And again, the devil never delivers. Like, you go all the way back to the garden, Adam and Eve. They thought when they sinned, they thought that's going to lead to life. What did it lead to? Death. They thought it's going to be wonderful peace. What did it lead to? Guilt and fear. And that's just what sin does. And we see this over and over again. Here in Leviticus, now this goes way back. They're just being warned about this. If they go off track and if they start worshiping other gods and all of that, God warns them. But if you will not listen to me and will not do all of these commandments, if you spurn my statutes, and if your soul abhors my rules, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but break my covenant, all of that, Israel did. And they were doing at the time Hosea wrote it. He said, then I will do this to you. When I break your supply of bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in a single oven and shall dole out your bread again by weight, and you shall eat and what? Not be satisfied. And that is overall the nature of sin. You think you're going to get fulfillment of it. You think somehow it's going to get you something that it's not going to get you. What's the old saying? Sin will take you further than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, and cost you more than you want to pay. And that's sin. Always. The devil is a liar. He wants you to think, oh, this is in your best interest to get involved in this or that, whatever it is. And at first, it might be okay, but it's just short term. In the end, you won't be satisfied. And that's the, see, right now, as God is talking to them, remember, they're in the lap of luxury. Like, they can't imagine all of this stuff that they have, all of this prosperity going away. But if they only knew, it is. It's going to. And there's a lot of people right now. Life is great. It's grand. They're just doing their own thing. Forget about God. They're not thinking about God at all. And little do they know, it's not going to last. It's not going to really get you what you want. And they shall play the whore, but not multiply, because they have forsaken the Lord. And so God is just revealing, this is actually what the Israelites were doing. They were involved in the worship of Baal. And remember that he is the god of fertility and of produce, and he was the god of simple things. The Greeks had the Gentiles had all these different gods, and the gods had power over different things, some over the sea and some over the weather. And then the more powerful gods had had control over several things. That was Baal. He was the chief Canaanite god. And so they thought he was responsible for their crops, for their children, multiplying, all of that, just everything. Rain, that was him. And the Israelites were falling into that trap. And so we'll talk about that more later, but a part of all of that, remember, we've seen it even in the New Testament a lot. We've talked about it. When people went off into idolatry, what followed? What was always a part of idolatry?
False gods.
Huh?
False gods.
False gods? What did those false gods have them do?
Worship of them.
Pagan worship. Sexual immorality. There was always drunkenness against sexual immorality. That all was a part of it. Like, that was never not a part of it. And the Israelites were going right along with that. And so God is just telling them, yeah, you'll play the whore, but this God that you're worshiping, the one who's supposed to provide for you and multiply your crops, and the one who's going to increase even your children, no, you're going to play the whore, but you're not going to increase. You're not going to get what you think you're going to get. You're not going to be satisfied. It's not going to end well for you. Even though you're having fun now, you're loving it all now, in the end, you're going to be disappointed. And if we don't get anything else out of studying the minor prophets, it's things like that that we should learn, because nothing has changed. The time has changed, even with God. The covenant has changed. A lot of things have changed, but this hasn't changed. Sin leads to disappointment. And you'll never be satisfied by it. Only God can give you true satisfaction. Only serving Him can give you the fulfillment and the full joy that God wants you to have. Following false gods, that won't get the job done. And it's the case with them. James E. Smith, in talking about this part where they shall play before, he says, this has been taken to mean that the priest would, one, multiply wives and concubines. And what he's doing, he's setting forth different takes on this passage. Some think it's talking about just engaging in literal harlotry. Others, that is just dealing with it spiritually. It's engaging in idolatry. And in some, even, that they would participate in temple prostitution. And it becomes pretty clear, even in this context, when we get to it, that they were doing that. Whether that's what he's dealing with specifically here when he says they played the harlot, the Israelites were doing that with regard to these temples. They very well may have adopted the Mesopotamian custom, where what they did was the common women of the city would go to the temple of the prostitutes and play the harlot. And the priest would go then to the temple prostitute and engage in sexual immorality. And the Israelites, there's passages that sound, it doesn't say it directly, but very much sounds like the Israelite women were getting involved in that. And so who does that remind you of right away in this book? You think, you know, that Gomer was probably a huge outcast. Was she? Or was she going along with the crowd? That's how bad they got. And we'll see that here in just a minute. That there's no doubt they were involved in that. So, but, you know, this particular reference could be any of these things or all of them. But they were a moral mess. And don't ever forget, we're talking about the people of God. And notice again, we can make an application of this to ourselves. Here's another application of it, but this is dealing with the people of God when they came back from captivity. So it's not the northern kingdom. They're obliterated by this time. But you remember why was it that the Israelites were released? When they finally were able, after 70 years of captivity, to go back home, what was the purpose of going back home? To do what? To rebuild the house of God. That was the mission that they were on. And you'll recall from Haggai and other books that they stopped doing that. They went home and they started, and then there was persecution, and that stopped them a little bit, and then they got engaged in their own affairs, their own houses, and their own crops, and they stopped rebuilding God's house. And you remember the passage that after 16 years, when they were confronted about it by God, they said, "Oh, the time, it's not time yet." 16 years later, it's not time yet. And so they were just tending to their own business. And so here you have, that's really the background to this passage in Haggai. And it says, "You have so much and you have harvest little." And keep in mind the passage in Hosea, "They shall eat and not be satisfied." And well, this is a different situation in years later, but the same thing. You have so much and harvest little. You eat, but you never have enough. You drink, but you never have your fill. You're clothed, you clothe yourself, but no one is warm. And he who earns wages does so to put them into a bag with hope. What's the point? Your life isn't working. Why? Because of that last part there. Because you have forsaken the Lord. And we can find ourselves today in a mess, and things around us just seem to be crumbling. Our life just isn't working. But it sometimes, with some people, it doesn't dawn on them. Oh, maybe I ought to try putting God first in my life for a while. See what that does. Because a lot of times the people of God, and the further their life begins to crumble around them, the less they think about God. And they just drift further away. And that's what is happening with his people in Hosea's day. And it happened again with them. They came back to the captivity. Like it didn't dawn on them. Well, yeah, nothing's working. Come, God isn't blessing us, and our crops aren't, nothing just seems to be working. And yeah, that's because when you offer a sacrifice to God, you offer him the lame. And you give your governor the best and give God your leftovers. And that's because at that time, you're not tithing, doing anything that you're supposed to be doing, and you're shocked that nothing seems to be going right for you. And the same thing can happen to us today. Go ahead, Paul.
A lot of what's talking about now, it's almost like if you read Proverbs.
Yeah.
It's almost like Proverbs, what Solomon was saying about evil companions, about putting God first, beware of prostitutes. I mean, a lot of warnings in Proverbs that
right.
If you read Proverbs, that's all you need to know how to live your life.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's more to it than that, but
sure.
There's a lot of warnings. He tells you about evil companions and about putting God first.
Right. Well, and you bring up Solomon because he's kind of a case study in the whole thing. Like he knew, and he openly said, I mean, he learned, he didn't see it at the time when it was going on, but later he figured out. It was all vanity. It was like chasing the wind. He talked about, I was trying everything to find that happiness, that satisfaction. Listen, all of us want that true inner joy and peace and calm. Everybody wants that. And Solomon's attitude is, well, let me see how I can go about doing that. He's the richest man on earth. I'll just buy my way to it, and that will get it. Silver and gold will get it to me. Knowledge, he tried that, everything. Nothing. He finally concluded, it's all vanity. Because the only thing that really works is giving yourself over to your Creator completely and totally. That brings true peace. The peace that Paul said passeth all understanding. That brings real satisfaction. That brings real joy and happiness. You want your way out of loneliness? You know how you get there? Turn to God. Give your life over to God completely. Whatever it is that is bothering in your life, the solution is always, will always be God. Jesus is the answer. There's no question about it. But sometimes when you're going through stuff in life, that's not what's on your mind. And for some, they never get to that point. They just end up being miserable. And some end up dying in their sins. The Israelites, they just continue down this path until God destroys them completely. And so, all right, so now he gets into the third section of chapter 4. So he dealt with the people and he dealt with the priests, and now he zeroes in on their sin of idolatry. Remember, they were involved in all kinds of sin, but he tackles this here. And he says, whoredom, wine, and new wine, which takes away the understanding. And when you think about the whoredom, basically sexual immorality. So as we're making application of it, this is really true. What he says here in this verse is true of all sexual immorality. He deals with whoredom because that's what they were literally involved in. Both spiritually and physically, the Israelites were involved in whoredom. And then the new wine and new wine, that's just drunkenness and intoxication. And this, what he says here, can be applied to all kinds of sin. But these two sins particularly do what he says next, which takes away the understanding. Like, it's just amazing that these, we know this about drunkenness, don't we? People get drunk, and what does it do to their understanding?
Inhibits.
I mean, you have people. I have family. I used to find my father, who was a drunk. I find him in the closet some mornings. Like, how'd he get there? He slept in the closet. What was he doing? His pajamas weren't in the closet. What was he doing? You know, like 1 in the morning, go in the closet and never make his way out. We had a pool, kind of. He built a pool in our backyard, but it was just a big old hole. He never got around to putting water in it because he ran out of money. But sometimes he'd be down at the bottom of the pool. Where's Dad? Look, there he is. Why? Just, you know, this is what sin does. Because all sin will cause you to be mentally intoxicated. And it causes you to do dumb, stupid things. Doesn't matter how smart you are. My father, for example, was a very smart man. He was very intelligent. But it doesn't matter how smart you are. I don't care how many years of college you have or what kind of letters you have before your name. It doesn't matter. Intoxication, drunkenness will cause you to be like everyone else. In that situation, will cause you to do stupid things. And sexual immorality does the same thing. We've talked about it many times before. Very smart people, politicians, and CEOs of companies just do the dumbest things because of sexual immorality. It causes people just to go crazy, to lose their mind. Remember about a month ago, that CEO was on the TV everywhere with his girlfriend, on the whatever you call that thing, the big screen, whatever it is. Like, I mean, how dumb do you have to be? He's a CEO. He was. I'm sure he was brilliant intellectually, probably very smart and all of that. But it's not too smart if you're going to cheat on your wife to do it in a public place and be out there in the open and. That's just stupid. That's what sin does. It causes you to be temporarily insane. And that's exactly what it was doing with Israel. And he's going to get into all of that. We'll see it probably next week. We'll see it. Because what God's going to do next, he's just showing these sins took away their understanding. Then he's going to show them how. Exactly how they did that. Like they were doing stupid things. And it was all because they were intoxicated by these sins, by alcohol and by sexual immorality. This fellow in his commentary says, this is a general observation about how things work in life. Once a man turns to prostitutes and intoxicating drink for pleasure, he loses his judgment. Hands and the harlots rather, and wine take away a man's mind. That's exactly right. And again, we can throw other sins in there. Just living in sin takes away your judgment and causes smart people to do dumb things. And it happens over and over and over again. And you're wondering, as we go through these things with Israel, how could they? Because they lost their minds. Sin did that to them. And they were so involved in it for so long, they just lost all understanding. And so he'll give some examples of this. And the first one, he said, my people inquire of a piece of wood, and their walking staff gives them oracles. Now, probably won't be able to finish this point, but here is a picture of a Canaanite idol. Like, this was found by archaeologists. This is something that they literally, those Jews back then, would have had. And they could worship. It has a face. It gives you the idea that it has a mind. And so something they could worship and they could pray to it and ask gifts from it and all of that. And God, but look, notice how God points it out to my people inquire about what? At the end of the day, what is that idol?
A piece of wood.
They're not thinking of it like it's just a piece of wood, but that's what God calls it, because that's the dumbest thing you could ever do. Ask a piece of wood to help grow your crops. That wasn't almost, that was exactly what they did. They lost understanding. We'll look at that more next week.